All right, so I'm Rachel Crestapino. For any of you who don't know, I'm a fourth year in the Religious Studies and Global Development Studies departments. This summer I did a summer internship in missiology. So in preparing for this, I found it really hard. I don't know if my fellow interns thought it was really hard to prepare this, but I thought it was really hard because I found myself trying to think about what it would mean to reflect theologically on the events of this summer, and I found myself kind of trying to figure out how I could incorporate, like, you know, Archbishop Rowan Williams' theology of the body into the way we, you know, how should that inform the way we treat transgender women and all these complicated things. And then I realized I just got to go simple and talk about the people I met this summer and what I learned from them, and tell a few stories. So and hopefully kind of group them thematically. So that's what I'm doing. So my first theme is place and space. So first I'll talk a little bit about where I was. So I was with a group called Because Justice Matters, which is a nonprofit in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And so their primary mission is to work with women and girls, women who have been exploited in a variety of ways, whether that's through sex trafficking or just kind of a life of homelessness, living on the streets, and a variety of socioeconomic and cultural challenges, language barriers, mental illness, that sort of thing. Basically, they're just a resource for women in the area who are downtrodden, and then also a resource for girls and young families to kind of try to break kind of this cycle of poverty that we talk about, and just kind of empower them to just be affirmed in who they are as young girls. So this is the Women's Center. Unfortunately, I don't have very many pictures with actual people in them because we had lots of restrictions on, we weren't allowed to photograph women. So this might be a little bit of a boring presentation, but it's probably the best when it comes to, you know, protecting people's privacy and that sort of thing. So this is our Women's Center called The Well. It actually flooded this summer, so this is like post-flooding, so it's a little barren, not as many things on the walls, but that just kind of shows like the, you know, the nitty-gritty of like working in urban environments where people, you know, fall asleep in the bathtub and flood your whole building. thanks for that. And so Because Justice Matters is a part of Youth with a Mission, which some of you may have heard of. It's a larger Christian missions organization. It's huge. It's all over the world. And so I'll come back a little bit to what it was like working with YWAM. So the Tenderloin, that's the name of the neighborhood. There's a couple of just images here. Just murals and kind of people in line for a homeless shelter and that sort of thing. So the Tenderloin is notorious for being just one of the worst neighborhoods in San Francisco. The name, there's a lot of like urban legend around it, but one of the more popular ones is that police officers would call it that because once they started working in the neighborhood, they could afford enough from the hazard pay to be able to eat beef tenderloin. And so there's a bunch of names for it. That's where it comes from. And so I worked in the Tenderloin, but I did not live in the Tenderloin. I actually lived with Melina and her family outside of the city. And while I learned a lot from them as far as hospitality and got to see some great home video footage and had a ball of the time, it was definitely a challenge to not live and work in the same place. And it really became a point of reflection for me of what it meant to live in one place and transition between two very different communities, from this life of prosperity to a life of extreme poverty. And just a few statistics, every day as I moved between these two communities, the number of non-white residents increased by 50%, the median household income decreased by 99,000, and the number of homeless residents went from nearly none to approximately 3,000. So it was a dramatic shift, definitely, day to day, and I commuted like 2 hours there and back, and so a lot of time to kind of ruminate on that and to kind of confront, yeah, what it meant for me to be coming into a neighborhood that I was not a part of, and to be trying to serve it in some way. But I learned a lot from watching the women who actually work for BJM and who make it a point of priority to live in the neighborhood and to be a part of the neighborhood. A lot of them are very young, and so they're moving around, newly married, that sort of thing. And they're always rejoicing when they could find real estate in the Tenderloin, which is the exact opposite of what everyone else in San Francisco area is saying. But they were just really elated to be a part of the community as much as they possibly could. And I got to watch the base leaders, Tim and Carol, who are in charge of YWAM Bay Area larger, just really settle in and become a part of community activism, that sort of thing. So I learned a lot from them. So a little more on YWAM. This is where the pictures end, sorry. This is this portion I call Reconciling Two Selves, because YWAM actually is an organization that I worked with a lot before I came to college. They're a very evangelical, very missions preaching oriented sort of organization. So that means a lot of like going out of the streets and proclaiming the gospel and that sort of thing. And I did a lot of work with them when I was younger, and then since coming here and studying a little more and trying to focus more on what it looks like to really like be embedded in a community and how development can really only come from that, I began to be pretty critical of a lot of things that I had seen there as far as just the transient nature of just teams of, you know, high schoolers completely unqualified, just coming and going and coming and going. And so when I found out about BJM, I didn't know that they were part of YWAM at all. And so somehow I like even recognized the address, Ellis Street, and I said, oh, YWAM's on Ellis Street. So I mentioned that in my email to them. You know, I'm coming to the same, I've been here before. And they were like, oh yeah, we're like a paraministry of YWAM. And I was, a little bit of anxiety came in there. But I don't know, I decided to embrace it because there were always really great things about YWAM, and one of them being that they're face-to-face with people day in and day out, and they don't shy away from that or lock themselves in an ivory tower, and that's not what I wanted to do this summer. And so I said, I'm going in. And I think I really learned how to critique generously, and also how to recognize the ways in which my upbringing and all this really have benefited me. So an example of that would be, even though I was working at BJM, so I saw a lot of the same women and children every day, I did also watch the city outreach department do their thing, and they had their own interns. And so I would walk out into like the dining hall area for lunch and just see like 100 of like versions of my high school self parading by, and just be like, and turn back into the office and eat my lunch in the office. I also interact with them sometimes. But and I talked to the interns a little bit about one of their outreaches that they call the homeless plunge, which is where they plunge themselves into homelessness. They basically, you know, get a little mat and they go out in the city and they just act like they're homeless overnight, which means not having any food, not sleeping under shelter. And I just was really bothered by that because I really felt like they're playing at something, an experience that they could not even imagine. And doing it in public, doing it where people could see them and could tell by the clothes they're wearing, how young they are, their whiteness, etc., that that they're playing at something that's not their reality. And so I asked the other interns, you know, as kindly as I could, like, does this ever bother you? You know, have you, because I assume, like, they're independent thinkers. They had to have thought about this. And a lot of them had, but what they told me was a very balanced reply. They said that, yes, they could understand how that could be problematic, but they'd also seen a lot of young people really change by the experience and had seen and heard reports of kids going back and deciding what they wanted to do with their life was, like, run a homeless shelter or something like that. And even though I don't necessarily think that that trade-off of, you know, we should jeopardize people's dignity for the sake of a learning experience, I was definitely trying to not do that this summer, even though I don't necessarily think that trade-off is fair. I do see the ways in which my own experiences coming up in the church and doing missions have shaped who I am, and recognize that I wouldn't have been doing this this summer if it weren't for that, and I probably would have very different career paths in mind if it weren't for my experiences. So there's definitely something to be said for it. But like I said, I learned how to critique generously, and I learned that a lot of the things that I was critical of within YWAM culture were things that really critiques I needed to turn on myself. And some of this transience could just be, you know, this kind of globetrotter lifestyle, moving from place to place, you know, all and for the sake of this higher divine purpose. I could see a tendency in myself for that to become self-indulgent or arrogant, and I didn't like it. And so I think it's valid to critique it, but I also have to turn those critiques on myself, and hopefully I've grown as a person because of that. People and stories. So these are just a couple of names of people that I hope to share a few quick stories about, who I learned a lot from. First is Kimmy. That's not her actual name, but that's the name I'll use here. Kimmy is a transgender woman. That was really one of the coolest parts of the summer for me, was working with, we had like a significant transgender population who would come in and be a part of our community. And I really love that, because as much as my religious studies work has had a lot to do with gender and gender identity, I didn't actually know any transgender people before this summer, and so that was really cool. And also, I was pleasantly surprised by BJM time and time again, because they are a theologically diverse organization. There are definitely a few people who aren't sure how they feel about gender identity and Christianity and how those two align. There are definitely people who are pretty staunchly conservative, and then one or two, myself included, who are more affirming of transgender people. But one thing that I learned is that political correctness does not equal love. And I watched the women of BJM love transgender women and care for them. And whether it was Nail Day outreach, where they just like held their hands and painted their nails and talked to them and prayed for them, and just this intimacy for 45 minutes at a time with each woman, or it meant, you know, referring them to social services they needed, helping them and calling them and saying, have you applied for that apartment? Have you, you know, just trying to guide these women and be there for them and listen to their stories about their transphobic relatives or whatever it is. I saw them really love transgender people, and I definitely learned a lot from them. And yeah, just realized that no matter how much like queer theology you can read and that sort of thing, it doesn't take the place of actually loving people and taking the time to get to know them. And so Julia was an excellent example of that. She was an older woman on BJM staff who became something of a surrogate mother to Kimmy. And there's a point this summer where Kimmy found housing, which is a literal miracle in the Tenderloin for a homeless woman. And Julia, like, just rejoicing. She planned a whole like housewarming party that all of BJM staff participated in. It was really a beautiful thing. And I got to help carry her gifts back to her apartment, and she showed it to me, and it was it was just a great thing to kind of be welcomed into that space. And also, Kimmy is just like the most over the top, just like energetic person, you know, rainbow fedora and hot pink and pop music blaring and just like flamboyant in the best way. And Julia just welcomed her into that. And like, she could be a lot. She was like a mess of a person. And Julia was just like, get in here. And she involved her in the ministry that YWAM was doing. She had her help out with the food pantry so she could serve the community that she was being a part of and that she was being served by. And I just thought that was some really beautiful reciprocity. So the next person, actually before I move on from that point, the transgender community was especially, I guess, timely for me to come in contact with this summer in light of everything that was happening with Caitlyn Jenner, because that, I mean, it was just a huge point that was of contention, I guess, this summer. One thing that I found really shocking is that I never talked to a transgender person about Caitlyn Jenner, to my memory. I talked to a lot of affluent people in like the Las Gatas area where I was living about Caitlyn Jenner, but I never talked, and I talked to a couple volunteers with BJM, but I never talked to any transgender women, because I realized that just this, there's a gulf between this, who Caitlyn Jenner is, and the lived reality of these transgender women on the streets. And the reality is that these women will continue to look like men because they don't have the means to, you know, afford surgery and cosmetics and the things that can kind of change their bodies to make to reflect the gender identity that they identify with. And there's a lot of self-loathing that's involved in that. And so Caitlyn didn't become a rallying cry for them. And I'm sure that they cheered her on and said, good for you, but it was just, there was a gulf. There was no, you know, imagined solidarity there. But they were doing, the transgender women in the Tenderloin were doing the hard work of living courageously and saying, people may reject me, my friends, my family, my church, my society, but I'm going to be who I am. And I learned a lot from that, and I was in awe of their courage. And so the next person I want to talk about is Gorilla. And so Gorilla is an interesting man, and particularly interesting because he was a man, and I was there for women and for girls. But he became one of the most influential people in my summer. And he actually told me I could use his name. I told him that I was going to be speaking about him. And he was very excited. So this one's for you, Gorilla. So I ended up writing a blog post about our first meeting because it was very surprising, I think mutually surprising. He would always say good morning to me on the street, but not in like a pleasant way, and like a, you just bumped into me and I'm going to say excuse you, like a little too forceful kind of like good morning. And so I was like, oh, good morning. And I always just kind of tried to assume that I was wasn't offending him, but maybe I was. I just kind of went with it. And then eventually one day he called me over, referred to me as YWAM lady, and called me over. And I was like, great, I finally get to find out what this guy's beef with me is. But he was just so kind. He called me over to tell me that he had seen me and thought I was really graceful. And I was taken aback by that. And then I asked him his name, and he ended up kind of shooting a bunch of questions at me about, you know, what was I doing with YWAM and how long was I going to be there. And he had a lot of really valid complaints about YWAM, about how they were always trying to pray for him and always trying to tell him what to believe. And he just was exhausted by these people coming and going, always new people. And I told him, like, I get that and that I've been a part of that. And that I wasn't there to tell him what to think, and I wasn't even there to pray for him if he didn't want to be prayed for, but I was just there to talk with him if he wanted to talk. And so we did have a lot of really good talks, and I found that we had a lot of commonalities in our thinking, and it was cool. And he eventually had something of a falling out with the YWAM community. The tension kind of built. I didn't see him for a while, but then I did see him again towards the end of the summer, and he asked me, he said, I want you to write my story. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to hear your story. He's definitely has some grandiose ideas, and his reality isn't exactly everyone else's reality sometimes, but all the more intriguing. I definitely wanted to hear his thoughts and put pen to paper on them. And so when I was finally able to track him down towards the end, he said, I want you to write my story. And I said, well, you know, I'm leaving in a week, but I'd love to if you still want to. And he said, no, I'm sorry. You know, and he knew from the beginning that I was going to leave, but he was just, I think, kind of reminded again, and he said, I can't tell you if you're just going to leave. And I said that was fine. I wasn't sad, because I knew that, I think anyone who's been in like a small group environment where they are kind of expected to like be vulnerable and tell people all their stuff will know that it's exhausting to entrust a lot of yourself with a lot of people time and time again. So I told him I got it, and I respected him for that, but I also told him that I was going to talk about him, and he was very excited, so that was cool. But so what I'm left with is fragments. I learned a little bit about his story just from talking to him throughout the summer, but I only have fragments, and that's kind of true of everything from this summer. I realized this morning as I was preparing that I was forgetting a lot of people's names, and I was really sad about it. And even though I'd kind of been through that before, as I described with some of my prior missions experience, I just couldn't, you can't hang on to all these, you know, 30 different people that you might see in a day over the summer, and then you don't see them anymore. You can't hang on to those names. And so, like I said, it's fragments. It's fragments of people's stories. It's little girls saying to me, you know, I ran away from home because I felt like no one wanted me there. Or it's someone describing their having to go home to their Midwestern family for a holiday, but hating it because they were transgender and didn't know how to tell their family. Or it's all these little pieces of things, that stories I've held on to, that I've been entrusted with, that I might not remember the name or the face or all three and be able to connect them. But that's kind of what I'm left with, is these pieces. And yeah, it doesn't have a neatly packaged ending, because the work's still happening. I came, I saw, I left, but BJM is still there, and it's still doing what they do, the wonderful women who work there. And so I'm just really thankful for the experience and for the stories that I got to hear. And yeah, the fragments of the summer that became something really beautiful. So thank you.